Thanks for joining us today on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here. Time to talk about physical therapy with our two experts, Lori Tyne Brody, physical therapist and an athletic trainer at UW Health Spine Physical Therapy Clinic. Lori, good to have you back.
Excellent to be here.
Jill Tyne Nissenbaum, an associate professor in the Doctor of Physical Therapy program at UW-Madison, our other guest today. Jill, good to see you.
Good morning, Larry, and all of your listeners.
We'll talk about how nutrition impacts sports performance, muscle mass, and even soft tissue in your body. We'll also take your questions. Do you pay attention to your nutrition needs when you exercise? Are you having some pains or an injury that won't go away? Give us a call. The number is 1-800-642-1234. Or you could send us an email to ideas@wpr.org. Jill, let's start with you. Nutrition and diet are important for a lot of things, but how important is it in your field of physical therapy?
So that's a great question, Larry. And I do think nutrition as well as sleep hygiene play a very substantial role in people's overall health and well-being, especially when we think about exercise and a fatigue perspective. We know that proper nutrition, including a well-balanced diet, including protein, different sources of protein are very helpful to fuel our bodies. And then also, should you sustain an injury, we also know that we need proper nutrition to aid in the healing process. I think Lori has a few more specific thoughts on that.
Yeah, Lori?
Yeah. So particularly as we age, which we are all doing,
hopefully.
Diet and nutrition become really important. So we know that as people age and elderly people tend to weaken, and it shows up in poor function, difficulty getting in and out of a chair, difficulty getting up and down off the floor. And some of that is due to decreased food intake. Some of that has to do with people just don't have the appetite they used to have. Sometimes decreases in some of their senses, such as their ability to taste and smell, makes food less interesting to them. And then having insufficient protein to fuel muscle maintenance and growth becomes really important. And then the last piece of that is ensuring a diet rich in polyunsaturated fats to minimize the negative effects of chronic inflammation, which we know to be detrimental to your health. So there's quite a few aspects of that to that as we age. And so when we are treating people and we're trying to strengthen people who, and we're seeing it now post-COVID, where people have been inactive for months and months due to the pandemic, and they are generally deconditioned. I see a number of people who show up to see me whose primary diagnosis is deconditioning, and we are trying to strengthen them, but it's very difficult to increase strength in the absence of a really good nutrition source to feed that growth.
And the other place I think we're seeing it is also in the high school population, because they're coming out post-pandemic or nearing post-pandemic, and organized sports are starting again. And unlike Lori's children, who maintained good physical activity during the pandemic, mine were not as good. And so for that reason, we have the whole population who is somewhat deconditioned now, and they're coming back and trying to get active, and diet and hydration play such key roles for this. Because your physical activity is increasing, many people don't think about their caloric consumption needing to increase or the type of calories that they're taking in need to increase or change. So we'll see some people will fall into a calorie deficit, as Lori was discussing. either typically unintentionally because they just don't know how many calories they need to consume with their increase in physical activity, or simply because it's a loss of appetite as we see in the elderly population. Food senses change and things that they normally used to enjoy eating, they no longer enjoy eating, and it impacts their appetite and ultimately their caloric consumption.
Thinking of my own condition yesterday, I was on Map My Run. I was getting close to 400 kilometers for the year, and so I probably did more than I normally. Well, I'm sure I did to make the 400 kilometers. And I looked at my and I was really hungry, and I looked at my steps at, and I ate. I was kind of felt bad about how much I ate afterwards and drank. You know, I had water and pop, and I had a beer, and it was by the time I was done, I'd eaten and drank a whole lot of liquid. But then I felt kind of guilty about it. I did. It was about 19,000 steps yesterday, so it was a fair number of steps.
Good for you.
Yeah, there is.
Well, I don't
also
know if it's good or not. I was kind of mad at myself for how much I ate afterwards.
Yeah. Well, there's also important information about the timing of your food intake after exercise. So, in terms of building muscle and restoring muscle after it's been worked in an exercise program, they really want you to intake protein right after your exercise session. So, you know, the old, we've gone out and done this exercise bout and then they give you a bagel and a banana. It does not reflect the protein needs that we have. So,
yeah,
I think that's important as well.
I ate two brats, so.
Okay.
Oh my goodness. Well, let's just talk. What does good nutrition look like? And
well, I think for everybody, that's a little different. There are so many interesting, different diets out there. People who are vegetarian or vegan. I think that plays an important role. I think you have to go back to looking at, the classic food pyramid and making sure that regardless of your source of protein, that you're getting an adequate amount of protein, regardless of your source of carbohydrates, that you're getting healthy, good carbohydrates. The other thing you need to consider when it comes to fruits and vegetables, and I was told this by a registered dietitian, and I remember I told Lori this, and we both decided that we were failing at this. You should eat 35 different fruits and vegetables a week. So it's not only you eat
35?
5 to 7. Well, it's not only that you eat 5 to 7 a day, but they shouldn't be the same thing every single day.
Oh, yeah.
So, you know, Lori eats bananas religiously. I just saw her eat one. And, but she eats a banana, and to eat a banana every day is good, but then to mix the other ones in. So it's not that you have broccoli every night for dinner, but you have broccoli one night and you have kale another night and cauliflower another night. So not only are you getting your vegetables and fruit in, but you're rotating them. And that's because the compounds and the makeup are so different. And I would say that definitely holds true with your protein sources and other sources as well. You don't want to eat chicken 7 nights a week as your source of protein. You should really be mixing it up. So tonight have 2 chicken brats instead of 2 beef brats or pork brats.
But, you know, that does get difficult, you know. So then if you're trying to balance, you know, what's right for the environment and should you eat red meat. So then now you have like chicken maybe, and then you have some plant-based stuff, and then you have fish, but it's not as easy as it sounds. But I know, and I have failed miserably at the 35 different unless you count the different lettuces in a salad mix, that I don't know how far that goes. But it's not unlike exercise, you know, where we have talked frequently about exercise not being the same every day. So the same is true of your diet. And if you have questions, Jill brought up a good point. You know, we got that information from a registered dietitian. They are your go-to person. And I know Larry has had some registered dietitians on the show who can do a deeper dive into some of that information.
Larry, you mentioned nutrition as being important in connective tissue health.
Yes.
What does that exactly look like?
Oh, boy. That is a fairly deep dive as well. So, you know, your connective tissue, bone, ligament, tendon, muscle, fascia, meniscus, all that, they're made of the same components. And we know that a diet that's hot, that's inflammatory, is unhealthy for all those connective tissues. So the inflammatory process, the systemic inflammation that's present, as well as a diet that that results in a lot of reactive oxygen species, which is an inflammatory type of diet, is unhealthy. And it's not horribly different from the damage we see in connective tissue for people who smoke, in that their connective tissues are not getting the nutrition that they need because of, you know, the elements of smoking or the lack of the anti-inflammatory benefits of your diet.
Yeah. At what point should we be concerned about how much protein? Proteins come up here quite a bit. How much protein we're consuming? I mean, how much?
You mean insufficient amount of protein?
Right.
Yeah. Off the top of my head, I can't remember what the figure is for number of grams per body weight, but it's an easy Google search.
Sure.
And that will tell you, based upon your body weight, how many grams of protein you should have every day. And as Jill said, that protein should come from a variety of different sources, from meat, fish, nuts, legumes, dairy, whatever. But making sure that you get enough, particularly after a bout of exercise.
Right. But, you know, all this talk about this, managing this and making sure that you do all this could be a full-time job. I mean, it's really overwhelming for many people. And there's a cost to it. I mean, we think about people who are retired and potentially on a fixed income. This becomes very challenging. So this is not without... its challenges. It's easy for us to sit here and say that this is what we should do. But Lori and I would be the first to admit that, you know, unless orange slice candy is considered a fruit, we're all failing a little bit.
Eat a lot of fruit, but I tend to eat the same fruit.
Right.
Like this morning, I had a handful of blueberries and some my breakfast cereal, pecan breakfast cereal, but I'll have grapes and a cutie and an apple and a low sodium V8, can of V8 for lunch.
Yeah,
but it happens every day.
Same here. I have the same things every day because.
Me too.
Yeah, I mean, I get up and I think, oh, geez, I gotta get something to take to work, so I grab the same things I tend to eat every day because they're convenient, because
right.
they work for me and my lifestyle. So you're absolutely
exactly.
right. It is difficult. You know, I think the point here that we want to make is that how well you recover from an injury and how well you sustain your functional independence as you age is certainly a matter of physical activity and exercise, but at the same time, we need the dietary infrastructure to support that activity.
Wow, that makes very good sense. Lori Tyne Brody, Jill Tyne Nissenbaum, our guests today as we talk with them about physical therapy issues. We've been focusing in on diet and physical exercise and how it may relate to injuries. You can join in, too. Maybe you've got some questions in this area, or maybe you've got another ache or pain that you need to have dealt with. You can certainly join in. The number to call is 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234. Or you can email us. The email address is ideas@wpr.org. Jill Nadeau, our producer today, Natalie Guyette. Jill's our on-air producer. Natalie Guyette, our producer. Christina Myshock, our engineer. I'm Larry Mueller. You're listening to the Ideas Network. Taking a look at all kinds of physical therapy issues today and zeroing in to begin the show about talking nutrition and your body. We can take other questions as well relating to physical therapy needs that you may or may not have or maybe an experience to share. I hope you'll join in. I'm wondering how you take care of your diet when you're an exercise person. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or you can email us. The email address is ideas@wpr.org. Let's talk about preventing ways we can support our bodies, and the glutes come into play here, if I'm not mistaken. I remember you saying something about glutes. Can you tell us why glutes are so important?
Well, the gluteal muscles are the largest muscle in the body and the most powerful muscle in the body. And they assist us with so many functional things we need to do. Going up and down a flight of stairs, getting in and out of a chair, getting in and out of our car, things like that. We use our gluteal muscles all day long. One of the issues we see, particularly in women, is they have a tendency to be very quadriceps dominant, or they use their quadriceps muscles a lot in lieu of their gluteal muscles. What they may do instead is substitute with their piriformis, which is another posterior muscle, or a smaller muscle that can get easily overwhelmed or overworked. And so many people will focus on glutes or increasing glute activation or strength to help kind of balance how we use our muscles for activities of daily living, like we talked about getting in and out of a chair, up and down stairs, things like that. So they're really important.
We have Lou in Ashland with, we had Lou. We don't have Lou anymore, but we have Pam in Whitewater, so let's go there. Hi, Pam.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Calling because this winter we hiked a lot. I was doing like 20 miles a week, and so I felt very strong. Going into gardening, now I have to engage my upper body. My arms are killing me. And I'm having a little shoulder trouble. So the muscle aches I don't care about so much because I know I'll get over that. But I'm wondering if you can tell me how I can condition myself better for gardening.
So that's a good question.
Yeah, absolutely. It's that time of year, and I was out in my garden this weekend pulling and so on. So think about the kinds of things you are doing when you're gardening. Are you pulling? Are you shoveling and digging? And then those are the muscles that we need to concentrate on. In general, we spend a lot of time talking about your rotator cuff because your rotator cuff provides some of the stability for your shoulder. Although it's not always creating rotation, it's always working to provide some stability at your shoulder when you do anything. So if you were to, Google exercises for your rotator cuff, especially working on your external rotators, that would be really important. And you can use a lightweight, anywhere between 1 and 4 pounds or so is typically sufficient for your rotator cuff, especially if you're doing what we call a long lever arm, things with your elbow straight, which would make sense because most of the things you're doing in your garden use a longer straight arm. So any exercise, one of our favorites is it's kind of like you're doing a big hug, like you're going to come up and hug somebody. So your arms are not straight forward. They're not out to the side, but they're at about a 45 degree angle in between with your thumbs up and just raising your arms up to just below shoulder level. Just below shoulder level, Larry. He's got his arms overhead. That's too high.
I'm trying it.
Start at your side.
From your sides up to a 90-degree angle below shoulder level. With a light weight is really good for conditioning your rotator cuff. So things like that, light weights, resistive bands, all work well.
The other thing which is great, I'm going to add really quick, is making sure that your scapula or your shoulder blade muscles are in good condition as well. So if you Google like scapular setting or scapular retraction, that getting your scapula or your shoulder blade in the right position will make that rotator cuff, those rotator cuff exercises that Lori referred to, even more efficient. So the combination of those two is probably a really good thing to do.
There you go, Pam. Thank you very much for calling. Ken in Stoughton, it's your turn. Hi, Ken.
Hello. I just wanted to make a comment or I guess a question about canned fruits and vegetables. I'll be 72 on Wednesday, so I grew up in the 50s. We did grow up out in the country, but frankly, we grew up on canned peas, canned corn, canned carrots, and probably fruit cocktail for
the first
18 years of my life. And
me too.
I'm relatively healthy, I think. So I'm not overweight and don't take any medicine. So, you know, I guess people shouldn't get too hung up on if I didn't get fresh fruit or fresh vegetable. You know, canned peas have still got vitamins in them.
Right, absolutely. Exactly. Jill and I grew up in that same kind of household where all of our vegetables came out of a can, and fruit cocktail, peaches, pears, all of it came out of a can.
Exactly.
So we understand. But also, you know, potentially when you were growing up, your lifestyle might have been a bit different as well. And so we can never, we can't look at an issue like that in isolation because you have what are called cohort effects. So as part of your age group, you also lived your life differently than potentially people are living it now. So, but good for you.
And the other thing is a lot of those canned fruits in particular are now packed in light corn syrup. So people are being manufacturers are being very cognizant of the heavy corn syrup versus the light corn syrup. So that's a really good factor. And many times if you look in the frozen vegetable aisle, there's no additives to some of the frozen vegetables there. So you can pop them in the microwave and have a good vegetable option. And, you know, living in Wisconsin in the winter, you need to look at those things. So that's perfectly understandable. So thanks for bringing that up, Ken.
Yeah.
Yeah. Thanks, Ken. Appreciate it. Rosie in Ashland, your turn. Hi, Rosie.
Hi. I just wanted to recommend another way to get exercising in this lockdown and know where to go part of the year. My sister-in-law, Chris Claypool, lives in Wheat Ridge, Colorado, and we get on the phone daily and do exercises either that she has found online or I remember from Silver Sneakers for about 45 minutes, 5 days a week.
Oh, good for you. So you got a pal.
I love that. I love that.
An exercise pal in another time zone that helps keep you accountable. What a wonderful thing to do. It's fantastic.
I'm guessing there's some joking and some laughing and giggling that happens at the same time. So it's got a lot of health benefits.
Absolutely. Good idea, Rosie. Thank you so much.
Awesome.
Pat in Madison wondered how she can maintain muscle mass through diet and exercise as she gets older without doing too much.
Well, we do get concerned about sarcopenia. I mean, that's a really important thing, the advanced muscle wasting that we see as we age. And so, you know, again, the best type of strength training or exercise that Pat can do is the type that's going to keep her compliant. So if it's, you know, an online class that she can do, if it's group exercise, if it's something around her house she can easily do some weightlifting activities with, followed by her making sure she has adequate protein in her diet, it's going to be the best way to go. So there's no set formula for this, I would say. I would say the American College of Sports Medicine recommends their ACSM guidelines are resistance training 2 to 3 times per week, 6 to 7 movements that involve the major muscle groups, Lori, if I'm correct.
Yeah.
And that's what you need.
Balance. Exercise.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
Thank you very much for that question. A listener emailed to say she's recovering from a traumatic compression fracture in a lumbar vertebra. What can she do to preserve her bone density starting in the mid-30s? And what exercises are good for helping back muscles and bone recover And I might even add, throw in a nutrition aspect of it, too.
Well, let's see, how much time do we have, Larry?
Right.
Yeah, that's a lot.
So I'll handle the bone aspect. Compression fracture probably tells me that this individual probably is osteopenic or osteoporotic, unless they had some sort of traumatic event which caused their compression fracture. So to build up bone, we know the bone needs to be loaded, and it needs to be loaded in various planes. So speed of loading and direction of loading or movement are very, very important. So we know that just forward walking or backward walking isn't going to be as beneficial for this individual as moving in multiple planes. And in this case, when they are able to also incorporate some rotation in through their trunk, because we want those rotational muscles to contract and actually do a little bit of tugging on the bone. So for somebody like this, they need load. They need to move in multiple directions, if possible, from a balance perspective, in varying speeds. And then ultimately, I would incorporate some sort of trunk rotation and movement with it.
So
and she's in her mid-30s, by the way.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. So she can do all that for sure. Yeah.
So for patients that we see with that kind of scenario, I get them in the pool. So oftentimes they can start in the pool doing strengthening exercises for their core muscles, including glutes, as Jill talked about earlier, and abdominals and low back in an unloaded environment. So we unload that compression fracture. So often people can get in and start exercising, working to strengthen those muscles. If she's in her 30s and this is an osteoporotic fracture, I would hope that she is seeing a medical professional to manage that.
Compression fracture.
Okay, so it was from trauma. So yeah.
Good.
So strengthening her muscles, getting really strong in her core, using her muscles efficiently to offload her back is going to be key. And she really should have the direction of a physical therapist for that. If she experienced a trauma significant enough to result in a compression fracture of those big vertebrae, which are really big, solid bones, then chances are she has sustained some damage to this other connective tissues and soft tissues in that area. And then she would really need specific guidance on getting that area stronger. One of the things that we see is that people then start protecting that area that was injured, and they change how they move, and then they start loading other components of the skeletal system, and they end up with a different kind of problem, which is why it's really good to have the guidance of a physical therapist who can watch for those things and make sure that as you recover, you're moving correctly.
We will take another call here. Mary in Appleton, your turn. Hi, Mary.
Hi. I am rehabbing from a L5-S1 discus extrusion, which has impinged my right S1 nerve. I did get a corticosteroid injection from my physiatrist about 2 weeks ago, and I've been using ibuprofen. I have improved greatly, and I'm going to be meeting with him this week. But what my question is I've heard a lot about the McKenzie method for PT. I am 58. I'm fairly good as far as my weight, and I'm wondering what is the best thing to ask for PT, because I definitely want to move forward without surgery.
Okay, well, PT, so the PT will examine you and decide based upon that examination, what the right exercises are for you. So ultimately, with a disc extrusion, we like to move into McKenzie exercises. And for our listeners, McKenzie exercises are extension exercises. So think about laying on your stomach and pushing up on your elbows. So that's extension. We eventually like to get to extension. However, sometimes you cannot start with extension. Sometimes you have to start someplace else, strengthening some different movements and a little bit of flexion, some pelvic tilt, some work on your core, and before you can actually get to doing extension. So so you can't go in and ask for McKenzie extension. You may not be ready for that.
Jill, you want to add?
And one of the things, Mary, is even if you start an extension or get into this extension-based progression, which your physical therapist may think is appropriate for you, eventually your therapist will teach you how to move in the other direction. So you may be biased into one direction for a while, but your therapy isn't complete until you go through that phase and you learn how to move in the opposite direction as well. And what we see in my experience a lot is patients will do the extension progression and they'll feel really good and they'll stop going to therapy and they don't learn that second part of it and learn how to safely move in the other direction. So once you start feeling good, Mary, keep going because you'll need to learn how to move in the other direction as well.
Well, good advice. Mary, thank you very much. Jamie in Algoma, it's your turn. Hi, Jamie.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I've been battling a pain in my side for over a year now. It's somewhere like halfway between my ribs and my hip. Had a CT scan of that area. All the organs look fine. Had a spinal MRI because they thought maybe the nerves going to that area were being impinged. They did an injection. That didn't help. I've been going to physical therapy, and I love my physical therapist. They are so knowledgeable, and they've tried so many things, including dry needling, but nothing seems to be touching it, and the pain is worse at 3 o'clock in the morning. It wakes me up every night. So I've not been getting the greatest sleep. One thing my physical therapist just recommended is a book by Dr. Stephen Gundry called The Plant Paradox. So I've been reading that. Haven't really tried the diet yet, but I'm looking into it. And I know you can't see over the phone what is going on with me, but I thought maybe you'd have an idea of something else I could try looking into that hasn't been looked at yet.
Is it your right or left side?
My right side.
It's always your right side.
Yes. To the same spot every night.
And how long has it been going on?
Since about January of 2020. And at the same time, my spine started kind of popping. It doesn't crack like when you have your back manipulated and there isn't the solid crack. But when I twist or lift heavy things or whatever, I can feel this popping up and down my spine that started at the same time. I don't know if it's related or not.
Wow.
I'm going to ask Jamie, so it always happens at 3 a.m. Does it matter what position you're in when it happens? In other words, are you always sleeping flat on your back or on your side? Or does it ever happen like, I fell asleep in the recliner sitting up and it didn't happen?
It's worse when I lay on my right side, but when I lay on my left side, then my left hip hurts. So I kind of go back and forth between the two. When one stops hurting, another one starts. And then I have a hot flash that just started. So that starts.
Oh, for goodness sake. are your joints in general loose? Are you a loose person?
Yes.
Okay. I wonder if there's just some hypermobility there that when she's lying on her right side, she's getting a little bit of shifting. So is it out in your flank or is it closer to your spine?
It's right halfway in between.
Halfway in between.
But halfway between front and back, between the center and the spine and the outside.
So it's deep.
Yes.
Yeah. So have you seen a physical therapist who specializes in visceral?
Visceral. That's what I was thinking too.
Visceral. Their spine is, I think, their specialties, orthopedic and spine therapy.
Okay. Right. So there are also people, for example, we have a physical therapist here who specializes in the visceral area. That sort of no man's land, that's not bony. And they look at things through a different lens. So I guess that would be my suggestion. It seems as though you have done all the traditional musculoskeletal orthopedic pathways. I might look at a visceral pathway at this point. So I would ask your physical therapist if they, I can't remember where you live.
Algoma.
Algoma. Yeah, I don't know where that is.
it's north up of toward here. Door County.
Yeah, ask your physical therapist if there's anyone there who specializes in visceral examination and treatment.
Give that a try, Jamie, and thank you so much.
Yeah, that's probably
calling.
What I do next. Yeah.
On to Nikki in Delavan. Hi, Nikki.
Hi, thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I am currently in physical therapy. I have about 3 more sessions left. I've been going twice a week. In 2009, I tore my ACL, bruised my MCL, and a meniscus. In the beginning of March, found out I was early pregnant and on a Friday, and then the next day at work, I kind of planted wrong and turned and possibly re-tore my ACL or MCL again. Because I am in my early pregnancy, they weren't able to do an MRI. So they just had me in physical therapy for the last month and a half. And I was just calling to see, because I was listening about the nutrition, because I'm not a big fruit eater, but I also, besides getting advice on how to incorporate more fruits and veggies in my diet, trying to figure out what other exercises I'll be able to kind of keep up on after I am done with physical therapy. Because I don't have a leg press machine. I don't have a leg curl machine. But I do still have resistance bands. I'm 29. I have about 28% body fat because I am more muscle than fat. I weigh about almost 200 pounds now. So just trying to make sure I don't exactly strain my knee too much, but still wanting to keep physically active because I do bartend as well.
Hmm. Right. So you're so the concern is, will the bands give you enough resistance for what we're talking about, very large muscle groups and somebody who's fairly strong? Because right now you're using a leg press machine and a hamstring curl machine, and those things can probably offer you more load than the bands. So I would definitely ask my therapist if they can give you the heaviest bands possible, and you can double or quadruple them. That will be a helpful thing. You can hold objects. So for example, you can put a backpack on and put a bunch of books or something in it and add weight close to your center of mass to do squats and things like that. The other thing is as much single leg activities as you can do safely, I would recommend, because that way you're basically taking all of your body weight through the affected leg. Things you'll have to remember is that as you go through your pregnancy, you're going to become more lax or hypermobile because of the systemic hormones that you are releasing. And so you'll really want to be cognizant of that. So if you have an unstable knee to begin with and then become a little hypermobile, you're going to want to make sure that you don't put your knee at risk for more injury. I would probably recommend, in all honesty, a knee sleeve of some sort. Particularly when you're bartending, I think you're going to need a little bit of compressive forces and a little bit of proprioceptive awareness. I don't know, Lori, what do you think?
Oh, absolutely. I was just thinking the same thing, that a brace or a sleeve or something I think would be really important now to protect yourself, especially if you're pregnant. If your knee gives out and you fall, you just don't want that to happen. So, and I don't know if there are any gyms up there that you would be able to access after you finish your physical therapy. If you can get some kind of a gym membership, it's going to be helpful for you in the long run to stay healthy.
For sure. Yeah.
Good luck, Nikki. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate it. Jill Tyne-Nissenbaum and Lori Tyne-Brody, our guests today. Jill, an associate professor in the Doctor of Physical Therapy program at UW-Madison. Lori is a physical therapist and athletic trainer at UW Health Spine Physical Therapy Clinic. I'm Larry Mueller. You're listening to the Ideas Network. Taking a look at nutrition in your body and your body kind of in general. Lots of aches and pains we've been dealing with here on the show today. Not me. Well, I shouldn't say we. I should say Jill Tyne-Nissenbaum and Lori Tyne-Brody, our guest experts, who come by pretty often to talk with you and with me about what's going on with your body. All those aches and pains and sprains and strains. Lots of callers online, and we've got some emails, so I think we'll get right to it with Jordan in Marengo. Jordan, thank you for calling. What's on your mind?
Hey, thanks for the opportunity. I had a partial knee replacement in early February, and things were going super good until one of the last days of March. In a parking lot, I stepped backwards into a really shallow pothole and only hyperextended the knee by an inch or two. And it's like the worst pain in my adult life. It was terrible. It took me three days to get brave enough to get in the car just to go get an x-ray. And the x-rays were totally clean, totally normal, totally healthy looking. I'm back and I'm up and around somewhat, but the pain at the top of my calf and underneath the kneecap just isn't subsiding like I thought. So I've got a 3 o'clock meeting with the surgeon today to determine my eligibility to return to work. So I'm just curious from all y'all, what are the questions I should be asking?
Well, first of all, are you currently seeing a physical therapist?
Until I got banged up, I was released by physical therapy because my lifestyle is pretty active. I understand the mission of what I'm supposed to be doing to rehab. Yep. Things were going super well. And, you know, I'm pretty active around the 40 acres, you know, taking care of spring chore stuff and, you know, aware of my body, aware of the balance between resting and exertion and, you know, exerting to the point of mild discomfort and building the strength back. And the PT guy agreed, hey, you know, you're doing it right. Just keep it up.
Perfect.
Let's go.
So the first question I would ask my surgeon is, should I be going back to therapy? Because what I'm hearing from you is I had this hyperextension mechanism of injury. My radiographs are fine, which is great, but there's soft tissue damage. So you clearly irritated the undersurface of your kneecap or your patella when you hyperextended, which is not uncommon. It just gets compressed. Then you're also complaining of proximal calf pain. So the question is, when you hyperextended your knee, did you really strain your calf or your gastroc? So I think going back to therapy and getting some good guided exercises to continue on this upward spiral that you were doing so great with, to just make sure that this little condition is a bump in the road and kind of get you over it faster. So that would be, I guess, question number one for me that I would ask the surgeon is, do you think I need to go back to therapy? I graduated, I had done really well, but now I had this little episode, not sure if I'm managing it correctly. Lori, what do you think?
I would modify that question a bit and say, can I have a referral to physical therapy? Not should I go to physical therapy, but I need to go to physical therapy because I have been self-managing this since the end of March and it's not improving. So I need someone to get me on the right track. And then that would be my first thing. And then, you know, what are the criteria by which, I decide that I'm ready to go to work? Is there anything I should avoid? Is there anything I should be aware of as I return to work in terms of this knee? Or can I go do whatever I want to do? So that's kind of where I would be at.
All right. There you go. Good luck. Thank you so much for calling, Jordan. Appreciate it. Mike in Milwaukee, on to you now. Hi, Mike.
Hi. Just a comment. As a single guy, it's hard to get individual fruits and vegetables, so I usually buy frozen packets of mixed berries and vegetables, and that helps out a lot for variety. Okay, the question is, I was recently diagnosed with calcification at the attachment of the hip at the right joint. This is giving me pain when I do squats, and if I get on my hands and knees and put pressure on the right hip, I get pain in that area. Physical therapy was suggested, and I plan on doing that. I'm a little bit guarded because of the COVID. Is there anything I could be doing now to get ready for physical therapy, and what can I do, and what shouldn't I do?
So calcification, can you tell me again where that calcification was?
It was at the attachment of the tendon of the hamstring at the right hip.
Okay. All right. Okay. Yeah. So, you know, that's not an uncommon scenario. We see, you know, calcifications and various tendinopathies around the hamstring insertion, the gluteal insertion, and so on. So are you able to stretch your hamstrings?
Yes, I do. I do yoga. I do Tai Chi. I'm in fairly good shape. My weight is decent. And I've been to physical therapy before, so I'm happy to go there.
Okay. Yeah. So it sounds to me like you're an active individual. You're doing some flexibility. It sounds like you're doing some core strengthening. So, you know, in terms of preparing for physical therapy, you know, the from where I sit, the best thing my patients can do for me is give me a really clear history and tell me how this happened, how long has it been going on, how does it feel, what makes it better, what makes it worse, and give me the pattern of your symptoms. And it's those patterns that we look for that help us identify both the origin of the problem, although in your case, we already know what the origin is from the imaging that you have, but it also helps us direct your rehabilitation program, so where we should start. So not everybody with a calcific hamstring tendon will get treated the same because everybody is at a different starting point, depending upon your activity level, your pain level, the irritability of that tendon. So sometimes people say, well, what should I do for this problem? It's a little hard to say because how I would treat you might be very different from how I would treat somebody else with the same diagnosis. And
exactly.
Again, that's why we tell you to see a physical therapist, because they will examine you and figure out where in that continuum of rehabilitation interventions we have you should start.
I think the level of irritability helps most with dosage. So I can do this many hamstring stretches and I can do them without pain, or I've been doing this hamstring curl against a red TheraBand and that's okay. But when I move to green, it's really painful at the insertion. Those kind of pieces of information are really helpful for us. So along that spectrum, it can help us narrow our dosage, our rehab program design, and the intensity of which we're going to give you all of these exercises. So sometimes patients are embarrassed to say, oh, I did this really dumb thing and it made me worse. My first comment is, please tell me what it is, because that helps me know how irritable you are. Obviously, it's something we're going to avoid. So maybe we can sort through and think about what you were doing from a body mechanics perspective when you did something that really hurt you. So all that information is very helpful.
Good luck. Thank you so much, Mike, for calling. Bev in Rhinelander, on to you now. Hi, Bev.
Hi. I'm presently going to PT, dealing with a trigger point in my back near the shoulder blade. I've had some dry needling done and massage and exercise. I've had this issue before, so I know it takes a while to get things calmed down. But this time, I'm getting pain. When the trigger point gets active, I get pain across my chest and into my breast area, and then the tightness through my chest, and that is concerning for me, and I'm wondering if it is related to the trigger point.
It could be related to the trigger point, or it could be related to if the trigger point and the muscle is causing a lot of tightness, if it's wraparound rib pain from a subluxed rib or a rib that's out of position due to the tight muscle guarding. It's kind of the first thing that comes to mind for me. Is that what you're thinking, Lori?
Yeah, I've seen people with that pain pattern description. And it's been a process trying to figure out the origin of it. I would just, Bev, continue to go to physical therapy, continue to tell your physical therapist about that and have them make sure they are examining your ribs where they attach at your thoracic spine, and checking your rib mobility and so on. And then just stay on top of this. But yes, I have seen the same pattern from a musculoskeletal perspective. And if the things you are doing are not helping it to get better, then you should, you know, think about alternative interventions. But it sounds like you're doing the right things at this point.
All right. Bev, good luck. Thank you. Eric in Algonquin, Illinois, your turn. Hi, Eric.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I appreciate you very much.
Sure.
So I drive through Wisconsin pretty regularly. I live in Illinois, and I have a new position at work, actually, where I'm doing a lot more travel than I used to. I had a gym membership, and I was doing really, really well with that and managed to lose some weight and was doing really well, felt fantastic. And then I got transferred to a new department at work, you know, partially because of COVID and whatnot. And now I'm traveling a lot, and I let my gym membership expire because I just didn't have the time to go and I never was home. And I'm wondering if your guests have any suggestions for, you know, some kind of basic ways I can kind of eat as well as I can when you're constantly on the road, you know, and I'm not in any one place for more than a couple of days typically. So, you know, stocking a hotel refrigerator would be difficult. And then if there's some kind of basic, you know, exercises or stretching that you can do, you know, every day possibly somehow.
And we'll take that up right after we take a quick look at the news and find out what else is in store for us here on the Ideas Network. We'll be back. Larry Mueller here. Great to have you along today on the Ideas Network as we talk physical therapy with Jill Tyne-Nissenbaum, Associate Professor in the Doctor of Physical Therapy Program at UW-Madison, and Lori Tyne Brody, Physical Therapist and an Athletic Trainer at UW Health Spine Physical Therapy Clinic. So, questions, you have some aches or pains you want to have dealt with? What about nutrition? Give us a call at 1-800-642-1234, or you can email us at ideas@wpr.org. Love to hear from you. So we had Eric from Algonquin, Illinois, who's now on the road a lot, and he had to give up his gym membership, wondering, how do I eat better and how do I exercise when I'm on the road like this? He's driving his car around Wisconsin.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's you know, traveling, that's a really difficult thing. So first of all, our bodies are designed to move. Our bodies are not designed to sit for hours on end. So hopefully Eric is able to stop on a regular basis and get out of his car and move. So that's true for all of us. As we can, we need to get up out of our chairs and walk around. So trying to get the steps in, depending upon the kind of work that he's doing, if he can park farther away and walk a little bit farther to get to his destination, if he can take the stairs instead of taking an elevator, those are all really basic things that you can build into your day to increase your activity level without having to have a gym membership per se. There are also certainly things you can do in the hotel.
Yes, there are lots of different things you can do in the hotel, even if they don't have a gym per se. So if you purchase some bands or tubes as resistance, you can do some simple strength training, some resistance training, and you can do it vigorously enough that you can actually get your heart rate up. So doing those kind of things in a hotel where you pack just some resistance bands with you is a really good strategy. Then if you have your computer with you, you can pull up things on the internet and look at different protocols or movements or programs that are out there and do those. You know, the other thing that's helpful, and depending on how much free time Eric has, especially with us getting more daylight, is depending on the cities in which you're going to, the areas in which you're going to, many of them have paths, either biking paths or walking paths. And you could start by going outside and seeing, well, how much time do I have? Do I have 30 or 45 minutes at night where I could go for a good walk? Some places have areas where you can rent a bike. B-cycle is what it's called here in Madison. And maybe you pack a helmet with you and you see if you have time to ride a bike when you're in some of these areas. And if you're really interested in it, like, gosh, I really enjoy biking, you know, to buy a bike, you know, a hybrid bike of some sort and put it on a rack on the back of your car. So wherever you are, you can find some biking trails is actually a really good strategy. And you could justify it by saying that you're using the money that you would normally spend on a gym membership on a bicycle. And that would get you through some really nice summer activities, I think, until you made it a habit. But Lori's absolutely right and Eric's right. It's challenging when you travel.
Yeah. So, you know, the habit is the big thing. So right now, you know, previously Eric had a routine where he went to the gym. So the idea now is to create a new routine. So most hotels do have a gym. So maybe it means you have to get up earlier. And so you go to bed earlier at night and you make it your routine to get up and go to the gym before you leave the hotel. Or as Jill said, you go to a YouTube video and you pull up some sort of workout on a YouTube video. Or also you just make it a habit of I'm going to stop and I'm going to walk for 15 minutes. But it's creating a new routine for yourself. In terms of eating, I have a good friend who's a truck driver for a living, and he packs bags of nuts and carrots and pre-sliced apples and things, and he's always got those things at hand so that he's not starving. And then you go, and it's easy to do the drive-through. So if you have options for you, and again, you make it a routine, and then when you stop, you seek out those places that have a salad with chicken on top or something like that rather than the drive-through. The big thing is to stay away from the drive-throughs.
And I think, you know, we always think of the drive-throughs as being our only source for fast food, but grocery stores are really good about packing individual salads and healthy options that are the grab and go. So instead of going to a drive-through, going to the grocery store, you'd be amazed how many healthy prepackaged, ready to go items grocery stores have. So that might be a better choice for you, obviously, than the drive-through.
Right. And then you get to get out and walk as well.
Right.
There you go. Lots of good tips there, Eric. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate it. Dave in Middleton, your turn. Hi, Dave.
Oh, hi. I was calling. I've heard your show before talking about lumbar spinal stenosis and that you have a water therapy program maybe in Madison. And I was curious about how I would get into that.
And you're in Middleton. Okay.
Yeah. So at UW, the physical therapy programs, both in spine physical therapy and sports physical therapy, offer aquatic physical therapy as an option. We offer aquatic physical therapy here at our Research Park facility, and it's also available at the American Center. So you need to have a land-based physical therapy evaluation first. And sometimes people say, well, why do I have to go to land first? Because I just want to go to the pool. So I refer you back to our previous comments where when we do an examination, we have to figure out what are the biggest limiting factors. How can we dose this in order to get you better? So we have to talk to you. We have to examine you. We have to see what your limitations are, what your strengths are, and so on. So first you have a land-based evaluation, and then from that we determine what's called a plan of care, and we determine approximately how many visits going to take to help you to get better. So we often will see people in the pool, and then as they improve, we try to progress them either to a land program, or we will help transition them to a community pool for ongoing exercise. Because typically chronic conditions like spinal stenosis, we will help, you know, get you out of the hole that you're in and get you up to a functioning level. But then at that point, you are responsible for your wellness, and we want you to continue the exercises that we have laid out for you. And sometimes people need a pool, so we try to get you oriented to another community pool and program where you can continue the things that we've initiated.
All right. Dave, thank you very much for calling. Good luck. Appreciate your call. Mary in Duluth emailed to ask why her knee hyperextended in a very random and painful way. It was just the right knee, and it just occurred when she was walking.
So sometimes your muscle, your quadriceps muscle, can give way. If there's a little pain mechanism, it can cause inhibitory synapses, or it can cause your brain to have a temporary shutdown of your quadriceps firing. And when that happens, you could hyperextend or lose control of your knee. So that's probably the most logical explanation for it. If it was a one-time episode, I wouldn't be overly concerned about it. However, if it starts happening with greater frequency, or she has pain in her knee, Mary should see someone, because we don't want her to be at risk of a fall. So if it was a one-time situation, just keep an eye on it, make sure it doesn't happen again. But if it starts happening with increased frequency, she needs to see somebody because of the risk of falls.
Agreed.
Kayleen in Waukesha emailed to ask for recommendations for a basic glute exercise. And what's best between walking hills, or climbing stairs? Those three.
Well, climbing stairs or walking hills are probably going to activate your gluteal muscles a little bit more, but it does put a little bit different load on your knees. So Kayleen would just have to make sure that it doesn't irritate her knees in the process. Gluteal activation is very, very challenging. So the classic thing we think about doing is a bridge. So where you're lying on your back with your knees bent and your feet flat, studies have shown that you will get more gluteal activation and less hamstring activation if you bring your feet back as far as you can to your buttocks. So the closer you can get your feet to your butt with more knee bend, the more you're going to activate your gluteal muscles. Interestingly, one of the studies that came out looking at EMG activity of the glutes just had people do glute squeezes while they were sitting to try and squeeze their butt cheeks together and work on squeezing one, just the right, and then just the left to isolate the gluteal muscle. And actually that came back as a exercise that was really good to train you how to use your glutes. And I know all of you are doing it right now.
Everybody squeeze their glutes now. here's what I'd like to say about the bridging. Is to be careful when you're bridging that you keep your belly and your front level.
Yeah.
When you think of a bridge, people think of an arch, and we don't really want you to be arching because you could potentially annoy your low back. So before you lift your hips up in a bridge, you should tighten your stomach muscles, pull your belly towards your spine, and then lift only as high as your hips will allow you to go, keeping everything in front flat. So no arching your bridge.
Rito in Milwaukee has a question. Let's go there. Hi, thank you for calling.
Hi, thanks for having me. I have a question. I have problems with my right knee, and I used to fence where you have your right knee exposed and you're always in a specific position. And now when I, for example, went skiing, my knee, I had a really sharp pain once I just get a little bit of angle on it, to the point where my knee almost gives away. And I wonder if I could do something with physical therapy.
So when you fence, Rito, was your right knee your front leg or your back leg?
Front.
Front leg. Okay, so it's kind of a lunging forward type of thing. And now with skiing, it hurts when you twist your knee. Is that correct?
No, just after, depends. Sometimes after 2 hours of skiing, it just gets worse and worse. So sometimes when I hike and go downhill, it starts as well.
Sounds patellofemoral.
It does, yep.
Yeah, it sounds like your kneecap. So all that lunging forward and then like that sudden stop on that right foot produces a lot of torque in your quadriceps and on the undersurface of your kneecap. And the symptoms that you're describing sound like what's termed patellofemoral pain, and that is pain on the undersurface of your kneecap. So seeing a physical therapist to do a good examination of your knee and of your kneecap can give you some specific strategies to help that. So not all kneecap pain is the same. There are a half a dozen different causes of kneecap pain. And so seeing a physical therapist to do a good examination to figure out what are the right interventions for you and your kneecap, I think would be a really wise choice. It sounds like you're very active. So getting that handled sooner rather than later would make sense.
All right. Good luck.
Fencing is a very asymmetrical sport. You use your legs very differently. And when you talk about skiing, you're kind of using them the same. So I think that probably plays into this as well, for sure.
Thank you very much for calling. Rusty in Partyville, let's go to you now. Hi, Rusty.
Hello. I wonder if you could help me with an issue I've been having for a number of years. I can walk around. I can hike, I can go 5 miles, I can do work. But if I stand around for even just a few minutes, I start to get a pain in the back of my calf. If I sit down for a while, it goes away and I'm good to go again. I don't know what it is, but it hurts, but I don't let it debilitate me or anything.
Sure.
Yeah. So, Rusty, may I ask your age?
I'm 75.
Okay. Your symptoms sound like stenosis in your low back. So typically stenosis likes to move. So stenosis is a narrowing. So it sounds like there could be a narrowing in your low back, putting some pressure on your nerves. And as long as you're moving, everything is hunky-dory. And then when you stop and stand, then you get symptoms. And then classically, when you sit, they go away. So that's a fairly classic pattern for lumbar stenosis. So in terms of what to do, you know, you can see a physical therapist and they can examine your back and see if there's any particular stretches or strengthening that they can talk to you about that might help with those symptoms, or some strategies about how to deal with that when your symptoms arise.
It might be standing in a different position, standing with your pelvis in a different position, perhaps standing with that foot up on a stone or something like that. But they may be able to help you with that. I think that's a good idea.
Yeah. All right. There you go, Rusty. Good luck. Kay emailed to ask if her COVID-19 weight gain is enough difference to aggravate knee arthritis. 15 pounds, yeah? Yeah.
Sure is. Yeah, unfortunately it is. And she's not alone in seeing the COVID-19. It's disrupted a lot of people's lifestyle, and I'm grateful that she's aware of it and trying to do something about it. So we put about 3 times our body weight through our knee with ambulation, going up and down stairs, things like that. So if you take 15 pounds and you multiply it by 3, that's, you know, 45 pounds of load. So absolutely something as simple as that type of weight gain without an increase in the muscle mass could definitely be factors for Kay to have that increase in her knee pain. And so go ahead, Lori.
And not only that, but, you know, if she's less active, I don't know if decreased activity levels were part of the COVID-19 weight gain, you know, how that all balances out, but also the decrease in activity from usual activity levels can also cause arthritis pain to rear its ugly head.
Right.
There you go. Susan in Madison, your turn. Hi, Susan.
Hi. I had a very successful hip replacement 2 years ago, and I was very faithful in my physical therapy. Since my pool has closed, or at least I don't have access to it like I used to, I've been power walking, and I'm up to about 17 to 21 miles a week. But since the weather has warmed up, excluding this week, I have gone off-road, and I'm doing a little all-terrain hiking, so to speak, and I noticed that right by my ischial tuberosity on the right side, near where my hip replacement was, there's a little bit of tenderness there. I'm wondering, am I overdoing it? I don't want to stay on road. I want to go off road. So what do you think?
Sure. Well, good for you for maintaining your activity level. It sounds to me like it's probably greater trochanteric bursitis. There's a bursa that lives right there. And with flexion and extension of your hips, Susan, you can kind of rub against there. So things that make this worse would be if your feet cross midline a little bit. So if you bring your leg in a little bit when you walk, and I'm assuming with the off, if you're off road a little bit and there's some uneven terrain, you're forced to do that. So good stretching of your IT band would be helpful. And then I would do some strengthening of your gluteus medius muscle. And Lori has her hand up, so apparently she's going to say something smarter.
not smarter, but just in addition, did you say ischial tuberosity or greater trochanter?
No. Well,
I said greater troch, did I? Or did I say ischial?
You said greater troch.
And I said ischial tuberosity. So where they screwed the cup into my pelvis, sometimes I wonder if those three screws, I don't know. I mean, I don't have any trouble with it just when I started hiking off-road. Mm-hmm. And it's
shorten up your stride. If you're taking a long stride, that would get either your greater troch or your ischial tuberosity. So shorten up your stride. Watch your downhill. If you're doing more downhill, you're going to load those things more. And just know that the pool at Research Park is opening May 3rd.
There you go. And thank you very much, Susan. Barbara in Middleton wondered why, as physical therapist, you don't mention massage much. She has had much PT in her life, and her last provider she saw suggested a certain PT group. Much to her surprise, the therapist always adds massage to the session. It is so therapeutic, as they know what muscle areas are tight and need more work.
A lot of physical therapists do soft tissue mobilization and or manual therapy as part of their treatment routine, for sure. So we approach it a little bit differently than a massage therapist. So we are looking for different things, as Barbara alluded to. So, but as a general rule, a lot of physical therapists, when they do their manual therapy with their joint mobilizations, things like that, they will definitely do soft tissue work. So one of the places where I use this frequently is with my patients who are have had a postoperative or postoperative within the first week, for example. So we want those muscles to be moving and we want the fluid to be moving. And if you can't contract your muscles as well, so then getting in there and manually doing it is a really good way to do it. So I would definitely agree. I think a lot of therapists use it as part of their routine when they do manual therapy.
And I think it's important to distinguish sort of manual therapy from massage as a relaxation technique.
Correct.
There we go.
Yeah, my patients would not say it's relaxing.
Thank you both very much. We'll look forward to your next visit, Lori and Jill. Thank you. Lori Tyne Brody, Jill Tyne Nissenbaum from the University of Wisconsin, our guests today. It was great to have them with us, and they'll be back in a month or so, and we will do this all over again. Tomorrow at 11, we hear from the author of a new book who says kindness can transform our relationships and change our lives. And then Mad Dog and Merrill come in with some grilling tips to change your life. Stay with us. I'm Larry Mueller.